have a dear friend, and we, you know, one moment we were out in a boat and we were having a gorgeous day, and then a couple of days later, her partner, who was with us that day, was on his motorcycle and was cut off, and he shattered his collarbone and his leg, and he is in such agony right now, but he survived. And she said to me, you know, we are so grateful because his bones will heal. And it brought me to my knees, because that's the kind of shift I'm talking about. Mm-hmm. You could be in the state of pure misery, and the amount of pain this human being is in, and 8 hours of surgery, a long healing time. But in that one moment, she shifted from misery to gratitude, because it's just the bones, and the bones will heal. And he's still alive.
Life is God's gift to you. What you do with it is your gift back to God. Well, in a world where challenges are plentiful, it's easy for us to feel discouraged. Yet with enough guidance and support, most people can achieve more in life than they ever dreamed possible. Well, beyond your fears is everything you ever dreamed of. For the Dr. Stem Show, we'll give the voiceless a voice and the hopeless hope. And now, here she is, Dr. Stem.
Gratitude can really change your life. Today, I'm so excited because we are not only going to talk about how gratitude can change your life, but we are also going to talk about soul whispers. And guess what? I know when I first heard about soul whispers, it was, What are soul whispers? So I have a guest with me today who's a really good friend of mine, who when I thought about talking about gratitude, about reminding people on how gratitude can play a very important part in your life to make it, you know, a happy life, a successful life, a grateful life, who can I call on? I decided there was no better person that could help me have a discussion on gratitude and soul whispers than Susan Casey. So welcome to the show, Susan.
Thank you, Dr. Stem. It's delightful to be here today.
Oh, I'm so excited. You know what? When I think about gratitude, I thought of a quote by Meister Eckhart, and he said, if only prayer that you can say in your life is thank you, that would suffice.
You know, Sheryl Sandberg wrote, the COO of Facebook, she wrote a book called Option B. And she lost her husband at 45 years old, and it was very traumatic, and she had two small kids. And a friend of hers said, you know, when something horrible happens to us, play the it could be worse game. And she said, what do you mean by that? How could it possibly be worse? He said, well, your husband could have been driving with your two children when he had the heart attack, and all of them could have died. Mm. And that's what I'm talking about. That's a shift. It's an immediate shift from something traumatic that's happened. And how do we find any morsel of gratitude in those horrific, dark moments?
It's interesting how in this day that, you know, I mean, there's so many problems that people are facing, you know, let's not, you know, even underestimate or undermine that. But then the interesting part about it is, like you say, it's a shift of the mind to a peaceful way of thinking. And also that there's this thing that, you know, I was reading about the subject, you know, over the weekend when I was preparing for this. And it's interesting that, you know, gratitude in itself has, you know, billions of dollars allocated to studying gratitude. And I laugh about it because, you know, I grew up around, you know, elderly, you know, grandparents that would, you know, probably laugh, you know, or turn in their graves if they knew that billions of dollars are being put to studying gratitude and telling people how important it is to be grateful about the little or small things in your life, because she would have given that, you know, advice for free. And here we are with, you know, billions of dollars being, you know, put to gratitude.
Yeah, absolutely. And I was listening to a radio talk show the other day, and I wish I could remember the author, but what he talked about was, if you wake up each morning and you begin your day by 5 minutes of silence, and then writing down 10 things that you're grateful for. It could be that you have clean socks in your drawer. It could be that you have food to put in your belly. And then you send out love to three people in your life that may need it the most at that time, or somebody that you're angry at. And he said, if you start your day like that every single day, then life all of a sudden starts to get better. And I want to just be clear, because I'm not talking about, I mean, I understand trauma happens and we grieve. And that grieving process is very important. So I'm not saying, oh, this gentle shift in gratitude, all of a sudden, you know, life is rosy, because we know that we all suffer deep pain, and we have to be able to feel that and allow that emotion to move through our body. But, you know, when I had the tragic death of my brother, are you kidding me? I didn't feel grateful. I felt shattered. And I had to start to practice what I preach. And when I was going through that process every day, I intentionally looked for a blessing in the day, just one small blessing. And did it make my deep pain suddenly vanish? Of course not. But I had to have that shift in my attitude each day to maintain some measure of hope that I was going to heal and I was going to feel joyful again.
And, you know, Susan, the other thing is, for me, what I do is on my phone, I have at 12 o'clock midday every day, my alarm goes off to remind me, and I have it written in there, what are you grateful for?
Mm-hmm.
So whatever I'm doing, whether I'm in an appointment, in a meeting, I have to excuse myself and just walk out and take a few seconds, or even sitting there to take a few seconds to breathe in and, you know, be grateful for something and say whatever it is that I'm grateful for. And it's interesting that you say, you know, I mean, you could even just be grateful for breathing, for having a job, for having, you know, money in your pocket, you know, something little.
Yeah, big and small. And Dr. Martin Seligman, who's the father of positive psychology, he's done numerous studies on the practice of gratitude. And we all took his 6-month course, and one of the things he had all of us do was to keep a gratitude journal. And instead of doing it in the morning, you do it at night and you write down 5 things that happened that day that you're grateful for. And he studied over a 6-month period of time to see what happened with each of us as we kept that journal. And, you know, we hear a lot of talk about being mindful and being present. And I think that in our fast-paced world, it's more challenging than ever to maintain this place of being truly present in the moment, because we think about the future, things that we're worried about. We're worried about the world right now. We're worried about what's happening politically. And when you start keeping a journal of gratitude, I'll tell you something else it does. It really helps you to shift your focus to be truly present, because when you're starting to log what you're grateful for, you have to be attentive and intentional. And I'll give you a really concrete example of this. As I started to keep that journal, I was with my mother out in the garden and I was weeding, and I can't stand weeding. And my mom and I, but because I had kept that journal of gratitude, I just remember thinking how deeply grateful I was for that moment with my mother, and that we were sitting there and talking and we were pulling these weeds out of the ground. It was just sort of like this aha moment for me, and it was really amazing.
And it wasn't about the weeds anymore. It wasn't about you hating the weeding anymore, right?
Right. Yeah. It was about this time that I had with my mom and just being with her out in the sunshine. You know, there's that other beautiful quote, when you change what you're looking at changes.
It sure does. That was Dr. Wayne Dyer that said that.
That's right, Dr. Wayne Dyer. Yeah, and what we water grows. If we focus on the things we don't have, if we focus on the scarcity in our life, that will grow. If we focus on the abundance, even no matter how small you think it is, that too shall grow.
And you know, they call gratitude the new wonder drug. Did you know that?
Mm. No, I love that.
I know they call it the new wonder drug, and I think that's so appropriate, for people if you get to focus on gratitude, because then there are many things, and if I may say these ones, Susan, there are many things that research and the researchers have come up with that gratitude can actually help and improve your life with. It reduces stress. That means it lowers the stress hormones. It can improve the quality and duration of your sleep. It can increase the desire, your desire to exercise. It lowers blood pressure. It lowers the risk of major depression. And I love this one. It improves self-esteem. So that's why gratitude is now called the new wonder drug. And to think of how simple it is for us to just say, you know what, instead of me focusing on my problems and what it is that I can't control, let me focus on those things that I kind of currently have in my life and what I can control.
Absolutely. I have another story to share with you. I was a social worker for the Salvation Army many years ago, and there was a huge windstorm, and I was with one of my colleagues, and we went out to the car, and we had lunch in our hands, and I opened the door, and the wind blew the door into my eye, right below my eye, and gashed it open. And I said, "Oh my God, thank you, God." And my colleague looked at me and she said, "Why are you thanking God?" I said, "Because it didn't hit my eye." And the door had hit me so hard that it would have done huge damage if it had actually hit my eyeball. So that's just another poignant story in my life where I just remember feeling so grateful that it wasn't worse.
And you know what? Many people probably have, stories like that one, and thank you for sharing that one. And most do not look at it the way that you looked at it. It's about the devastation of, oh my God, I've been hit, on my eye. But I want to take a shift
Okay.
on gratitude, because what we've talked about in this first, segment are the general things that a lot of people will say, well, okay, I've heard about that. I've heard about being grateful for the small things. I've heard about gratitude, probably when you're grateful that, you live a happier life, you get more in your life. But I wanted to talk about our friendship. And in us talking about how we met and the things, that we have encountered, I think it will also help, listeners shift the way that they look at life, because sometimes we take it for granted that we're supposed to do this and things are supposed to happen to us in a certain way, and certainly not. But then life in itself helps us to take a step back and be grateful.
Okay. Do you want to begin by telling them where we met?
Oh, where did we meet? We met at the Passion Tests certification. I know. I was thinking, oh, where did we meet? We actually, and it's interesting that this show comes, right after we did a dedication show on America Out Loud for Kelly, who's one of our, hosts that took her life a year. It's nearly a year ago now. And so it was myself, Susan, and Kelly. The three of us met at the Passion Test training in North Carolina in 2013. But I think what was more poignant for me in being grateful was the differences that, how different we are, the two of us, and yet we connected as friends. The way we look at life, the way we do things, and what happened was, right after we met, we decided that we would start doing seminars together. You remember?
Yes, I do.
Yes. And we had put together a workshop that we were going to do. And I think you say it better than I can on how, the planning and everything turned around, because today it's a lesson. But I can tell you that it was a very, very frustrating time, that if anybody had come to me and say, talk about being grateful for this friendship and for Susan being in your life, I probably would have looked at them and walked away shy of saying something, you know, shy of cursing them out and say, oh no, you don't understand. I don't think so. So I think, you know, you can tell it better on how the you know, this whole planning and everything turned around, because today it's a different story of gratitude that we talk about.
Okay. Well, yeah, let me set this up. So, I was still, in a pretty deep grieving period of losing my brother, and Stem and I had talked about doing a Soul Whispers conference together. And by that, going back to being in the silence, it really is around, it's only in that quiet place that we can really hear the sound of our own soul to give us direction. And opposite of being an ego, I guess the way I'll put it. So Stem and I were going to do this seminar, and I didn't feel ready. And Stem's like, we can do this. We're ready. So I felt pushed, and I ended up saying, okay, maybe I am just afraid. Maybe I just have to walk through the fear. And it was a moment when I was not listening to my own soul whisper, because I wasn't ready, because I was in such deep grief. So anyways, I booked the hotel. We made all the arrangements. We made the flyers. And then I said to Stem, she was so excited about this, and I'll never forget it. I was away at a writing retreat, and I was sitting on a bench, and I said to Stem, I want to cancel. And we had already put the money down to hold the hotel space where we were going to have the conference. I was shaking. I thought for sure it was going to end our friendship. And I am... and I am so committed to keeping my word, and felt that I was really letting her down. And at the very same time, I had to honor where I was, no matter how difficult it was for me to do that. And when I told Stem that I wanted to cancel, there was this very loud silence on the other end of the phone. And I started to cry, and I thought, oh my gosh, I'm letting her down. I'm going to lose this very special friendship in my life. And Stem was, and you can speak to how you were feeling, Stem, because I think, why don't you say how you felt at that moment that I said, let's cancel.
I felt you were a chicken. You were not straight. You were not strong. And honestly, the other thing that had happened was, as we were planning, I think, you know, many a time you had expressed to me that, you know what, you wanted to, you wanted me and you to have some moments where we can practice together so that you can see whether, you know, my style. Mm-hmm. And see how compatible that we are as, you know, I mean, as two presenters that can present a workshop together. And the more that it was said, it also spoke to my insecurities, because then, what do you mean? You mean I'm not good enough, you know? Mm-hmm. So prior to you canceling it, I had already thought, well, she doesn't think I'm good enough anyway. So you know what? I am good enough. And already I was battling with that to say, you know, I probably don't want to do it with her, because then she's not trusting the fact that I'm good enough. And when the cancellation came, I thought, you know what? It's mainly because she didn't trust the fact that I can do it. Because then you are one that wants to plan things in advance. You want to go through, you know, the modules. You want to go and planning. Whereas if you give me something today, I can plan it overnight and I'll present it the next day. Mm-hmm. And that's not you. So then, I mean, and I didn't understand that. But I think the important thing about this is, as we are talking about this story, I wanted to bring it so that we can bring together the way that people struggle with expressing what it is that their heart is saying to them, or what their heart is desiring. We're talking about those people that realize that, you know what? I'm not happy in this marriage. I'm not happy in this relationship. I'm not happy in this job. And they are going through what you went through when you were telling me to say, you know what? This is not something that I want. And there is that, you know, rejection and resentment. And you name it, that is so scary when you go through it. But
yeah,
I accepted it.
Well, I think that there was something profound that happened during that conversation, we had a choice in that moment.
Yeah.
You could tap on me and said I'm a weak and chicken, and then you could have never spoken to me again.
Well, we're a new breed of talk radio, and with a new breed of host and shows to entertain and inform you. It's America Out Loud Talk Radio, with shows like Blue Lives Radio, OPSEC Radio Special Operations, shows that impact your health, like The Misdiagnosed Life, The Dr. Stem Show, What's Inside You, Mind, Body, Energy, and our newest show, Life, Liberty, and the Pursuit of Pleasure. Thank you for sharing part of your day with us here at America Out Loud Talk Radio Network.
But I think what happened in that moment is that we both had the courage to talk through it.
Yeah.
And we both had the courage to stay on the phone and really listen to each other and be very authentic and honest. And that takes courage. And I think any time that we listen to our deeper voice, it does take courage to listen to it and act on it, because what keeps us, I think, in a very stuck place, whether it's a relationship or a job or any other situation we find ourselves in, is the fear of the aftermath. It's the fear of, if I leave this job, I'm not going to find another one. If I leave this relationship, you know, maybe this is just the best I can do. Whatever it is that we tell ourselves. And I had this deep, deep fear of our friendship ending, but I had to honor my inner voice, because what was my alternative was to do the soul whispers when I felt like I was not in tune with my own, and it felt like I would have felt more like an imposter instead of speaking from my heart, which is the way I like to live my life. I'm a writer and a therapist, and I think that, you know, what we did that day was we honored each other, and we honored each other's process. We honored each other's quote unquote soul whisper, and it deepened our friendship as a result.
And I think for me, the lesson is, well, I thought I was ready. And it was about you and I doing this workshop and being able to present to the ladies that we were going to present the Soul Whispers to.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think I had reflected on what it is that I was going to share about my own personal, Soul Whispers, which, you know, the last 2 years as of our counseling that, you know, conference, I have gone through changes in my life. And a lot of you listeners that are listening in today, I did do a podcast about my being homeless and coming from that homelessness within the last 6 months to a place where I now know what gratitude is. I now understand what soul whispers are, because when your soul whispers that it's time to rest and relax, when your soul whispers that everything that you own, everything that you have is nothing compared to life and health, you don't understand it until you lose it all and you have no other place to go except to be still and just wait for that next whisper, for your next step in your life. And that's what, you know, that lesson for me was, because if I have to stand on stage today with you, Susan, and talk about being grateful and talk about gratitude, as well as talk about soul whispers, listening to your heart and going with your heart. And the lesson is, you don't want to focus on pleasing the next person or disappointing the next person when it comes to listening to your heart. It's a bigger picture than, mm-hmm. you know, that person that you're talking to or that person that you're afraid of. It's a whole bigger picture than them. It's bigger than them, and they would never understand, and you wouldn't understand either if you focus on the bigger picture, which is your soul and the whispers that it has and the impact that you're supposed to have on life.
Yes, beautifully put, Stan.
And I wouldn't have explained it that way. I wouldn't have seen it that way, that today, even the smallest or the simplest of things, I'm grateful for.
Well, Well, and I think, you know, and I think in your situation, I mean, I think you're one of the most courageous people I know. And I think I've told you that many times, because not only did you uproot your life and leave Massachusetts and go to Florida, because that is because your soul, I think, has called you to move to Florida for many years. And you finally made the move. And then you had a near death experience with your illness. And then, I mean, you've been through so, I feel like you've walked over the coals and through the flames to get where you are.
And I tell you, every second of the pain and everything that I'm going through, it's worth it. I'm grateful for it because it has made me a better person. It has made me a happier person, believe it or not, because I'm so much at peace now. I'm so much relaxed and understanding that life is going to happen exactly as it was planned to be.
And I think that's when, I think that happens when we listen to the voice of our own soul. I think that we can waste a lot of time when we can waste a lot of time in this life when we bow down to our fears and we give in to our fears, because that's what holds us back from that deeper, higher purpose. At least this is my belief.
And I agree with that belief. You know, there are people that are listening right now and you're probably driving to work or you just came from work. And it's one of those jobs that you say, oh, I hate my job. I can't even stand, you know, waking up and going to this job again. I hate the people there. I hate the work that I'm doing. I tell you, when you don't have a paycheck or money coming to you to be able to pay your bills, to be able to buy the things that are necessary, necessities, not any extras, but just the basic necessities, you begin to acknowledge and be grateful for that work and that job that you have, because without it, you wouldn't be in a place to complain in the first place. Mm. And that's what gratitude is about.
Absolutely. And what I would say to listeners, you know, if you are in a job that you loathe and it's not joyful for you, then it's what Stem said. What parts of that job can you be grateful for? You know, and maybe it is that paycheck at the end of the week. But while you're doing that job, can you be thinking about what is it that I would really love to do? And can you hold that the present and the vision at the same time? Because I think that sometimes people have a dream and where they are and where they want to go seems too far and too long and impossible. And so that future dream falls away, which is the difference between people who bring their dreams to fruition and people who don't. And it's holding both. And it's, as you said, what can I be grateful for today in this job? Because even that will automatically make that job better. Because now you're focusing on the things. It might be a colleague that you adore, and it could be anything, any tiny thing at that job that you're miserable at. But also to be thinking about, where do I want to go? What do I want to do? How do I get there?
And you're right. When you start finding and you know, acknowledging the things that you can be grateful for. I remember I was working in a call center at one time, and I can't tell you, that's probably one of those jobs that you can say when you're counting all the jobs that you've done and you say that was the worst job. not worst in the sense that, you know, it was really bad, but in the worst that it was so stressful. And then we had to get, you know, call after call. And I was at a call center for a health insurance company. So we were talking to physicians and we were talking to therapists that needed authorizations to see people, to keep people in the hospital, and they're calling in for authorizations. So of course, it was stressful being in the call center itself with supervisors, you know, I mean, over you and overseeing it. But I had to find something to be grateful for. And you know what I found in being grateful? What? I started listening in for the callers that come in all stressed out and under pressure themselves from the hospitals where they are, or, you know, a therapist's office where they are, and they have this distraught patient or, you know, client that they have in front of them. And then I get to talk to them, and then they go, huh. It's so good to talk to somebody that can at least listen, because sometimes it's so hard when you're going through and you want to get authorizations. But even though I didn't get all the six sessions that I wanted, it was good to be able to process it with somebody that, you know, I can understand why I can only get three sessions rather than the six sessions that I asked for. And when I started looking for those comments and those people that were actually, you know, happy or grateful to talk to me, I thought, huh, I'm actually making a difference. So that's something to come to when I come to work, to see, okay, how many people are going to be saying, oh, thank you, I feel better, or thank you, that was helpful to hear that information and to be, you know, explained to in that sense. Whereas I'm still denying them, I'm still under the same pressure in my call center. But at the same time, now I'm looking forward to making a difference to somebody's life, whether it's one person, two people that say it over the phone with me, but I can hear it, I can sense it, and it made me feel good.
Yep, that's a beautiful example. And I think, you know, no matter what job any of us have in this life, we're serving, we're in service to somebody, to do something. And, you know, I'm sure most of the listeners have also heard that, I mean, that really is our deepest purpose on this planet, is to serve in some way. Yes. And so I do think that if you can look at the role that you're playing of being of service, even if you're on an assembly line, right, it doesn't matter where you are or what you're doing, you are providing a service at the end of the line to people. I can't really think of a profession when you're not. So, you know, and I had a similar experience. I was a pediatric social worker, and it was one of the most stressful jobs I've ever had. I was driving very rural parts of Maine. I was driving three and a half hours a day. I was exhausted. I'm driving in the snow and the sleet. I remember this one day where it was sleeting and snowing at the same time. And I was on an ice. It was just, the road was completely ice covered. I had to stop. I had to walk down this hill to this home, slipping on the ice, you know, trying to juggle my computer and all of my paperwork. And I thought, I hate this job. As I was saying, I was walking down this hill. I'm like, I hate this job. Yeah. And so I get into the house, and I was working with this elderly woman and her son, and trying to get them a very important service so that this woman could stay home till end of life. And it was just this beautiful spiritual moment that, hey, this isn't about you, Susan. Yeah. This is about them, that you are here to provide this service. So you had to walk down, you know, so you had this little mild inconvenience. What's the deeper purpose here? And it completely turned my day around and that job around for me.
It's not about you.
It's not about me.
It's right? Not about me. I like that, because many of times I have said that. I'm actually working in the library right now, you know, in Florida. I work as a library social worker in the library system of Orange County, Florida. And one of the libraries, I'm assigned to five libraries. And one of the libraries, the manager, we just didn't click. You know, you walk in and, you know, his aura and, you know, the aura of the whole library just, you know, didn't vibe with me compared to the other four libraries where I really am excited to go to. And by the third week that I was there, I was like, oh man, here we go again, you know, going to this place. And that statement that you just said is what saved me, you know, from not being grateful about going to this place. Mm-hmm. I started thinking, you know, it's not about me and it's not about him, this manager, whether he likes me to be on his site or not. Or, you know, I'm not feeling as if, you know, I'm being a part of, you know, this team, and they're not, you know, embracing the fact that I'm a new addition to the team for the day that I'm there. I have to look at the patrons that I'm working with, the clients that come into the library and are surprised and excited that there's a social worker in the library that can, you know, talk to them and give them resources in the library, right?
Right.
And I started thinking of it that way. I walk in and of course I see, I think that the first day that I started thinking that way, I saw about seven people that came in and, you know, saw the sign that there's a social worker on site and started talking to them. By the end of the day, I couldn't wait to come back again to that site because of the people that I served. So I changed everything that I was looking at and started looking at a different thing, which was the people that I was serving, the people that was gaining from this service, and not me, not, you know, the manager, not what I can do, but the service that I was able to provide for the people. When you start looking at it that way, it's amazing, amazing, the energy.
Yep, and I think looking at it from a whole bunch of different perspectives, you know, from the front line when you're, you know, because that's frontline service.
Yes.
But let's talk about the CEO of an organization, or let's talk about, I'll give you a really great example. I worked for an international behavioral health organization, and it was my job to train clinicians and clinical supervisors. And for me, it wasn't even about, it was not, for me as that clinical director, it was not even about the agency for me. For me, I wanted to train and help these clinicians hone their skills no matter where they work, because it wasn't about the company. It is about them being the best they can be, so that they can help to improve the quality of life for human beings who have mental health issues. And so, so it's never about the agency or about, I'm so passionate about this because we are here to be the highest and grandest expression of ourselves and to be in service, because that is what elevates the vibration of the world. If each of us shows up to be the highest and grandest expression of ourselves, can you imagine what this world would look like?
Amazing. Amazing. And those examples are just an example of how you can change the way that you look at things, and the things that you look at will change.
Mm-hmm. Yes, because I remember we would pour hours and hours and hours and hours into training. And when the turnover was high, it just is in this field. And I, you know, the state director would say, oh my God, this is costing us so much money. You know, we've wasted all this time. And that's when I would say, no, we are creating good, strong clinicians that are going to make a difference in the lives of so many.
And that's whether they are, you know, within this agency or beyond.
Correct.
Yeah,
exactly.
So it's interesting, because then here's the other thing. A lot of people will say, well, you know what? I also can understand that. But how about in my relationship, in my family, with my children? Sometimes there's nothing that I can see that I can be grateful for because of all the stress in the relationship or all the stress that I'm going through with the children. You know, there's nothing called balancing my work and life because there's no balance sometimes. What do we say to those people about gratitude and finding those moments?
Well, it's interesting because our when I was the clinical director of this agency, we dealt with some pretty complex families. And with a lot of with multiple issues, from poverty to mental health to, sometimes there were multiple people in the family that had a mental illness. So one of the things that I love to do with families is I would have them decorate a jar and have little pieces of paper next to it, so that every day, because now they're shifting their focus. Remember, it's very easy to focus on all of these problems when there truly are a lot of stressors in a family. And that each of them every day had to fill out one of the pieces of paper and say something that they were grateful for about somebody in their family. And then at the end of the week, they'd all sit down and the therapist would be sitting with them, and they'd pull the pieces of paper out and they'd start reading what they were grateful for. And when that starts happening, just these little sprinkles of magic start happening in the family, because again, now they're mining for that those little nuggets of gratitude, and that's where now their focus has shifted. Do you see? It's just like the story I told you about the weeds. And so you can always, if you're looking at a garden, you can either focus on the weeds or you can focus on the beautiful flowers. Where do you want to put your focus? And so those exercises helped to shift their perspective and therefore, and then the energy of that family dynamic. And it works and it's powerful.
I like that. Where mm-hmm. do I want to put my focus? Mm-hmm. Would be a statement that I would take away from this show. Where would I want to put my focus? When you're faced with a situation that can really cause you stress for the day, that can cause you stress for a lifetime, that can cause you to shift from that place of being grateful for that place of being peaceful, the statement could be, where do I want to put my focus? And if that's not yes. the place and you can shift your focus to something else that gives you energy, that, you know, keep you vibrant, then shift your focus.
And the other saying I want people to take away is what we water grows. If we water the weeds, those are going to grow. And if we don't water the flowers, they'll die. What do you want to grow in your life? That's your focus. And every time you put focus on it, that is metaphorically what you're watering.
You're listening to the America Out Loud Talk Radio Network. It's where we say, let the silent voices be heard. We invite you back to AmericaOutLoud.com to get all the latest. Make it a daily stop and also get the app. You go right to the App Store and download our free app, and that will put all our content right into your hands on your phones and your tablets. It doesn't get any easier than that.
Think back to the last time you felt healthy and energized. The best times of our lives occur when we're at the peak of our health, sleeping better, full of energy and focus. We know that fades with age, and you might be feeling the effects of aging as low energy and poor sleep. But it doesn't have to be that way. There haven't been any nutrition systems designed to rejuvenate our bodies as we get older, until now. Healthy Cell Pro is the only multi-nutrient system that impacts the building block of your body, the cell. Created by anti-aging expert and Nobel Prize nominee, Dr. Vincent Giampapa, award-winning Healthy Cell Pro cuts through the complexity of nutrition supplements by simply giving you the purest ingredients, filling dietary gaps to nourish your cells and enhance your quality of life for optimal performance. Visit HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for an exclusive discount or call 844-869-9958.
If you're resentful in your relationship, if you're one parent that goes, you know what, these kids, I don't know what to do with them, and you're always saying negative things and you're focusing on the negative things that they are doing, guess what? You're watering that and that will grow. If you're in a relationship where you and your spouse, you know, maybe, which is very normal and common, that you're not on the same page and things are not working out right, and you focus on that rather than trying to find ways of making peace and talking about and resolving those issues, guess what? You'll be watering that and of course they will grow.
Mm-hmm. That's exactly right. And it's, and I'm not saying that any of this is simple. If you've been in a combative relationship with your spouse or with your children, and you know, and you're committed and you don't want to leave your marriage, let's say, then how do you shift what you're focusing on? And it can be the little things. I mean, you know, if my husband makes me a cup of coffee, thank you so much for making me that coffee. And I think that, you know, because I think that we also want to feel appreciated, because each of us put out a lot of energy every day to a lot of different relationships in our life. But just again, you know, it's like you said, Stem, when you opened up this interview, just the word thank you can go a long way.
It can go a long way. You know, when I was young, we used to sing this song. I don't know if you know it. It was something like, you know, the head bone is connected to the shoulder bone. The shoulder bone is. Do you remember?
Yeah. I do remember.
So I say that, right, to want to, you know, to point out a point that says everything is connected. And if you're stressed out about one part of your life, it is going to trickle down to everything in your life. You cannot say you're grateful for one part of your life and then the next, you know, part, if you're grateful about your home environment, your marriage, your singleness or whatever it is, and then you're miserable about your job and the people that are at your work, everything is connected. It connects. At the end of the day, I think it's about mathematics. A plus and a minus is a minus. So it's not going to be a plus. It'll be a minus. You are miserable. I think one of the things that we have to emphasize is take a tally of everything in your life and see if you're being grateful for every part and every aspect of your life, good and bad. The bad part, try and shift that and find what you can, you know, be grateful for in the bad part, because everything is connected and you want to be grateful for every part of your life so that everything works together for your own good.
Yeah. And if you want to try a mini research project, listeners, start your gratitude tonight. Write down 5 things at the end of the day. Do it for 6 months. And boy, I'd love to hear if things shift for you.
You're right. Because then, you know, I mean, after 6 months, it's a behavior that's changing as well. And your brain, you know, tends to, you know, change and you grow through that to try that. That's an awesome thing. And also, you might want to try what I have on my phone. If you're a busy person that, you know, can put in a time that an alarm can go off. And when that alarm goes off, you see on your phone and what it says is, you know, what are you grateful for? And you just name the things, write them down. It sure will shift and change your life if you begin to look at life that way.
Amen.
So let me do this in the last minutes that we have for this, you know, for this show, Susan. I have some quotes that I have for gratitude. So when I say a quote, I want to see what comes to mind for you. And these are quotes that, as you listeners are listening in, they are quotes that can help you also be grateful for the big and little things in your life. Okay? So Willie Nelson said, "When I started counting my blessings, my whole life turned around." What comes to mind?
What you mean for me in my own life, or
for you in your own life, for you as a reminder for the listeners based on our conversation today when you hear this quote?
What comes to mind for me, as I said earlier, after my brother's death, I had to each day find a blessing in my day, and which helped me on my journey of healing.
For me, I think my stubbornness of, you know what, I just want what I want and I want to do what I want to do. And I moved here to Orlando and became homeless and lost everything. And I didn't have a job. I didn't have money. And I just came to a place of surrender. When I surrendered it all and I said, I don't know it all. I don't have any control. Moved stuff into the storage. And then I realized that, you know what, by me being grateful for the little things in life, for not having any money, not having a job, and not having a place of my own, being grateful that I could have a place, you know, to stay and wake up every day and look for work, to me, that turned my life around. And I can tell you that, you know, with this statement, when I started counting my blessings, my whole life turned around, is very poignant in my life.
Yes.
The other one that I have says, feeling grateful and not expressing it is like wrapping a present and not giving it. And this was William Ward.
Oh, I love that quote.
I loved it too. When you feel grateful and you don't express it, it's like wrapping a present and not giving it.
Wow, that is so powerful, because going back to my comment that we're here to be in service, yes, that giving gratitude to another human being is like a wrapped gift. And it reminds me of, do I have time to talk about the gratitude letter? This is really important. I can't believe I didn't think of it. But it does tie
into
this quote. Okay. But yeah, again, Mark Seligman's course, you write a gratitude note to somebody that really helped to shift your life. It could be your fifth grade soccer coach, and you write the letter and you deliver it in person. And it is one of the most powerful exercises. And that's what that quote brings up for me.
Wow. I have another one that I think is powerful by John F. Kennedy. He said, as we express our gratitude, we must never forget that the highest appreciation is not utter words, but to live by them.
Can you read that again?
As we express our gratitude, we must never forget that the highest appreciation is not to utter words, but to live by them. So just saying thank you or you know, I'm grateful is not enough. You have to live by those words. You have to mean it from your heart.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Because some people might say, it's like forgiveness. You know, when we talk about forgiveness and say, you know what, I forgive you and I'm grateful for you, but it's not coming from the heart and you're just saying it because I have to say it. A person can feel that you're just saying it just to say it, but you don't mean it from your heart. And I think that's what this means, to say, you know, when you're being grateful, do it from your heart and do it wholeheartedly. That's how it will work out better for you, rather than, you know what, I heard it on America Out Loud that if I'm grateful, then my life will change. So, okay, I'm grateful. I'm happy. I'm, you know, thank you.
Well, and I think there's another piece to this, too, that I also hadn't mentioned yet. So about keeping a gratitude journal, it's not just that I'm grateful for the clean air. What about the air are you grateful for? You expand the idea of gratitude when you take the time to reflect about what is it about the fresh air that you're grateful for? What is it about your spouse that you're grateful for? You know, what is it? How does it expand your life? And I think that you're right, Stem. I think that we can be very, you know, tongue in cheeky when we say just make a quick list of what we're grateful for, because we have to really think about what is it? How is this expanding my life? What does this bring to my life? And that does expand the idea of what it means to be grateful. And that's where the power is.
You're right. And Naomi Williams says, it is impossible to feel grateful and depressed in the same moment.
Yeah, absolutely. You can't. They're opposites, right? Depression is a very internal, hopeless feeling. And of course we know clinical depression. I mean, that's our field.
Yeah.
To be grateful is this external, I mean, it's internal course, it has to stem from there, but it's this external, it's the exact opposite of depression, because it's a great gratitude and joyfulness, to me, are synonymous.
Yeah, they sure are, they sure are. And I agree with that. You cannot be grateful and depressed at the same time. So it's almost like choose one. Are you depressed or are you grateful?
Which goes one back, are you gonna... Right. And then we have clinical depression, and I don't want to, like, you know,
undermine that. Yeah.
Yeah. That's a very real mental health issue. And however, for people who do have clinical depression, to be able to, you know, to have their medications and augment that by some of these activities that we have talked about today, to help them on their own road of recovery.
Susan, it's one of those segments that, you know, when we start to talk about gratitude or anything that we talk about, you know, we can talk about it until we are blue. So the challenge for every one of our listeners that has been listening, you know, today is, what are you going to do about, you know, reflecting the gratitude that you have for your life or in your life, about the people, the places that, you know, you have been or that you're going through in life. One of the things that we talked about is making a list of those things that you're grateful for on a daily basis. You can start with one thing. You can start with 5 things. You can start with 10 things. Or you can sit down and list a whole 100 of those things. But writing down is really going to help you reflect on those things that you're grateful for. The other thing is, you might want to find a gratitude partner. And Susan is my gratitude partner, believe it or not. Someone that you take time to talk about gratitude with. And, you know, as Susan said, you can write thank you letters to those people that you're grateful for. And I had forgotten about that. So I need to write my thank you letters, because as I come out of this, you know, time that I've been going through right now, I have quite a few people that I need to be grateful for, and I'm going to write it, you know, down and write letters to them so that they know that I'm grateful. It's not about being embarrassed about where you're from and who has helped you. You can't be embarrassed about it. When you acknowledge it, then that means it's coming from the heart, and I have no problem writing letters and letting those people know that I am really, really and truly grateful. So surround yourself with grateful people and grateful places. And I'm glad that you're listening to America Out Loud, because I can't tell you, we have some rowdy shows on this show, and we have some exciting shows, informative shows that you can always listen to 24 hours a day on America Out Loud. And with that, Susan, any words of encouragement as we end this show on gratitude?
I just would love to, I'm hoping that the show has inspired each of you to be able to reflect on your life and try some of these things out. And about the gratitude letter, I just want to say some of the parameters we put around it is for it to have a beginning, a middle, and an end. And really, if you're thanking somebody of how what they did impacted your life, because again, the gratitude letter is not even about you. It's about the gift that you're going to be giving to this other human being to know that what they did had an impact on your life.
And to end this show, I'll end with a dose of motivation by Mike Erickson. He says, "I truly believe we can either see the connections, celebrate them, and express gratitude for our blessings, or we can see life as a string of coincidences that have no meaning or connection. For me, I'm going to believe in miracles, celebrate life, rejoice in the views of eternity, and hope my choices will create a positive ripple effect in the lives of others. This is my choice." And thank you for listening to the Dr. Stem Show. Be encouraged and encouraging.